Welcome to Equestrian Movement's Best Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our first Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Hey team, Katie here from Equestrian Movement, and today we're going to talk about some of the work we're doing in the face-to-face riding school with regards to developing the aids for Bend. And I wanted to go into what aids we're using, but also, you know, where you're going to find yourself stuck when you're working on Bend, and then how we're looking at layering and scaffolding these aids on top of each other to develop the more complex cues that we're working on as we try and progress up the training scale and do more athletic work with the horses with regards to the quality of the bend and the lateral movements and working towards collection and that kind of thing. So to start off with, we have to understand a little bit about training theory. We're going to be using, so for example, when I'm working with a baby horse or my students are new, they're just learning, we're going to start with the concept of negative reinforcement or pressure release. We introduce the concept of negative reinforcement pressure release to the horse on the ground. This is what we cover in our holistic horse handling program, is how we're going to get the horse seeking the release of pressure without it building tension, maintaining that relaxation while they're seeking answers and looking for, how to answer those cues correctly whilst also building that positive work ethic, so they're enthusiastically engaged even though we're going to be asking them to do hard things. So we start that on the ground. We work on our awareness for the horse's capacity to relax, how we're going to engage them in work, because each personality is motivated by different things. Angel, for example, has a very high reciprocity rate, and so she needs quite a lot of treats to give her best work, but she does great work. So she also does, you know, the reciprocity is there, right? And Phoenix is very cuddly. So if he does like a little bit of work, he needs to have his cuddles. Rabbit also likes his treats and his cuddles, but he also just really likes a break in between his efforts. So we start to learn how our horses engage and work, how their brain processes the information and seeks the release of pressure. We're looking to build a really positive relationship with pressure and negative reinforcement tools on the ground to be able to transfer them in the saddle. So when I'm introducing the concept to the kids, I think about negative reinforcement a little bit like that annoying child that's like hassling you, going, mom, 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 mom. So you're just like being a little bit annoying. And then as soon as you get a response, then you're quiet, like you're completely quiet, don't move, keep everything really. And so to begin with, you're teaching a horse to seek your quietness by giving different behaviors, and then how you're going to shape that is your shaping plan. So that's what we're doing with baby horses and green horses, is we're teaching them to seek our quietness by doing a shaping plan that's going to help guide them into the behavior that we want, that's going to create that quietness, paying attention to their levels of tension that they're holding in association to the application of the pressure, but then also, like, you know, when they are babies, they don't just hold focus and concentration for an hour. They maybe hold it for 15 seconds. So we're like drawing their attention and focus onto us and then allowing them to mentally relax, drawing it onto us, allowing them to mentally relax. So we're building that brain power for them to be able to hold focus and attention for prolonged periods of time. That's part of the education process. I have to do that with my students as well. They don't just like come into a lesson and can hold focus for half hour, hour, and maintain that focus and attention on the horse. That also has to be developed. We have to call and focus the rider's attention onto the horse, ask them to hold it for a period of time, and then give them a mental break. And we're inevitably going to see things like frustration, irritation, overwhelm, performance anxiety, like all of those little things that come up in association with building work ethic. We're building also into it the emotional agility to be able to recognize those different tensions and encourage the horse to find relaxation again before we offer the next ask. So that's like the foundation of what we're doing with the holistic horse handling, is we're building this positive work ethic so that then when it comes time to ride and like work athletically, they already have the mental and emotional tools to navigate the stresses, the mental and emotional stresses that come along with work and learning and that kind of thing. So by the time we're in the saddle, we want the horses to have a really positive relationship with the negative reinforcement. So it's not what we typically think of with negative reinforcement, where you're just, you know, being a little bit annoying and irritating to them and then quiet when they listen. We're actually going to use these aids for communication now. So let's say for something really simple, if I am teaching a baby horse to go on the ground, I use a dressage whip, not for punishment or as an escalation of pressure. I use it as a tickle, like just the tip of the whip, the tickly bit. I'm just going to tickle their hindquarters with it to ask them to walk on. And I'm going to do that in our in-hand work first, doing the matching steps, because I already have the cue for the walk on off of the matching steps ask. And now I'm associating that ask, that forward ask, to just a tickle with the whip. So now I can use that for my in-hand work. So when I start mouthing the horses, I create the go from just tickling their hindquarters with the whip, and now we're developing a language through bit pressure to follow the bit and stop off of two rein pressure. That also means then when I go to sit on them and ask them to move in the saddle, they have a word that they already know. Well, they have multiple words that they already know. They already know go, stop, and turn. And so now all they have to think about is carrying. So they already have confidence in how to answer the aids correctly. So the first rides are just about carrying the rider and finding balance moving underneath the rider. So at this point, I'm not using the whip so much as negative reinforcement cues of, you know, applying a pressure that they're seeking the release of. I'm using that operant conditioning theory to create a language, to create a new word. The word is go. And so I don't have to use the pathway of operant conditioning to get their horse to move forward, because they know that I'm asking them to do something. The word is go. And so then we're able to start creating a language with the horse where we can now ask them to go, we can ask them to stop, and we can ask them to go with turn. And that's what I mean about the horses needing a really positive association to their negative reinforcement tools by the time we're in the saddle, because we don't want the, you know, emotional turmoil that comes up from seeking the release of pressure to be happening in the saddle. There's a lot of times when I'm working with horses and they don't understand that the purpose of negative reinforcement or pressure release is to seek the release of pressure. They've just been like, they've just had a tool used on them with escalating pressure and then that behavior captured, rather than using it with the intention of encouraging the horse to seek the release of pressure by giving us different behaviors that we've tried to shape out. So then we're cross-referencing this behavior that we've shaped out with this cue. And now we have a language. We now have a word that we can use with the horse, and it understands what the correct, like, do air quotes, correct behavior is from that cue. They now understand it as a word. The word is go. This doesn't necessarily mean that just because we ask the horse to go, it will go. It just means that it knows the answer. And so how we engage their positive work ethic in that training session then becomes a factor in maintaining their sensitivity and responsivity to the cues. So most people can get the hang of this. This is what I call a single word cue. They can get quite good at achieving just these single word languages with the horse with a little bit of practice once they understand that the horses even have the capacity to communicate. That's a whole different conversation. Like, a lot of riders can come in riding very mechanically, thinking that the horse doesn't have the capacity to actually be in conversation with you. And so then you're not looking for how the horse is responding. You're just kind of manipulating them into different shapes and postures with your body and your aids. But the horses have the capacity to engage in conversation with you off of these aids. And it's how, you know, they put pressure back into the aid is how they respond, and that's a language that develops over time. But most people get the hang of what I call these single aid cues. One behavior, we can mark it, we can motivate it. You can think of things like walking off of halter pressure, asking them to stop, asking them to pick their legs up so you can pick their hooves out. In the saddle, we're looking at stop, go, turn. If you're looking at dogs, it's like single behaviors, ask them to sit, ask them to lie down, ask them to shake, ask them to beg. One behavior, you can mark it, you can motivate it, you can associate it to that visual cue or vocal cue that you're going to use. And then you're not necessarily having to get them seeking the answer anymore. They just know that when you give this verbal or visual cue to them, that is what you're looking for. What gets a lot harder is when we start linking these cues together to create new words. And that's a lot of what we're doing in the saddle when we're riding, especially when we're looking to progress in the training scale. So for example, a half halt is basically stop and go applied at the same time, but it's creating a new word, and the word is balance. So how do you put your reins and your legs on in a way that communicates balance to your horse? Done poorly, you can teach the horse to rear. You can teach them to rear and they flip over backwards on you. Done correctly, with relaxation of mind, seeking the answer, looking for what that language is going to create, you get a rocking back of their balance into their hindquarters and a little bit more of a driving forward out of it, so that they're shortening their body and bringing and their balance more centered. So how do you communicate this with a horse? We have, you know, a couple of different exercises that we use that starts introducing this concept to the horse. And then over time, as their balance gets more established, we can ask for more, basically. So for example, our baby horse is only just learning how to carry. So they're not going to be shifting their balance around significantly to do a half halt. They're just going to be trying not to fall over, basically. And so we're giving them the time to develop their balance with carrying the rider. Once they can maintain that forwardness, walk and trot in particular, and then once we can get a little bit more in trot than in the canter, then we can start talking about, you know, shifting the balance back so that it lightens the forehand to make them more maneuverable with their steering. And so this is what we're looking at with bend. So firstly, we're just looking at developing language with our horses. And so as I go into these aids are always a very difficult one to verbally communicate. You might need to listen to this while you're riding, and then listen to it when you finish, and then listen to it again when you're riding, and then listen to it again when you finish. When I explain aids and these kind of harder training concepts to people, I finish the explanation and I can see the blank faces and go, too many words, and they're like, yep. So it's always handy to kind of hear these words and then go and have a play with the concepts and practice it, and then come back and listen to it with like a more physical, like, application understanding of these concepts and theories. The other thing that happens with writing is that the first part of the process is purely coordination, and that, you know, it is coordination of the horse as well, but there's a coordination pattern required from both horse and rider. And so you want to know that it takes 1,000 repetitions or 2 to 3 months to really efficiently lay down that communication pathway from the brain to the body to be able to execute a particular movement. So one of the non-negotiables that we have in our warm-up, and one of the first thing that our students learn, is inviting a horse down into a stretch and back up into contact. And that is important to the horse because we're allowing them to warm up their back before we're asking them to more actively hold and carry their rider. But for me, it's introducing the ability for the rider to be able to let go of the reins to the buckle and then gather the reins back up again, that coordinated effort that gives your hands the dexterity to be able to adjust the length of rein. And so even though we're giving the horse an opportunity to warm up and stretch their back, what I'm really doing is giving the students, you know, practice of being able to drop the horse's mouth, drop the reins to the buckle, still be able to communicate to the horse what to do without holding their mouth, and then being able to softly gather the reins back up and the horse's mouth back up before releasing it all and inviting them back down into relaxation again. That's a coordinated effort where if you don't practice it, then you don't have confidence in your hands and you're going to be holding the horse's mouth really tightly because you don't have confidence in the reins. You're uncomfortable if they get too slack. You're uncomfortable if you are trying to ride without contact. And, you know, it's important for the horse that you can ride them without contact. One of my prerequisites to an advanced rider is being able to ride without contact, walk, trot, and canter, and over jumps. So it's important that you know that your hands aren't what is controlling the horse. Yes, it is a tool for communication, but not for control. And a lot of, you know, what we're trying to do is bring the horse's willingness and choices to participate into the saddle and not trying to control their participation through creating pain and aversives and control with their mouth. It is hard as a rider to tease those two apart because you're sitting on a horse's back, you're very vulnerable. And so you're going to, when you feel unsafe, when you feel vulnerable, you're going to want to like clamp down on their mouth and have control. So it's really important that we understand that you don't physically have control of the horse just by holding the reins shorter and tighter, and that the communication, the language, that quality of togetherness and the horse thinking about what you want it to do and choosing to do it with you, all of that happens on the ground first. You really need to understand this language of the horses and how to work together with them on the ground before you start asking them to carry you and balance you and do these harder things in the saddle. Because when you don't understand that part of it, you're then going to use your reins to try and control the horse, and you're going to hold them very tight, especially if you start to get anxious that you're not in control. And then that's when you tend to be more out of control with the horse. So the more you try to like tighten and hold and control what they're doing, the more out of control the horse tends to get because they don't like it. And now they're scared and they're fighting what you're doing because you're doing it very aggressively. The aggressiveness is not necessarily intentional. It's just coming through because you're feeling uncertain, scared, comfortable. So all of these ideas and concepts, they're laying down a foundation for what bend is going to look like. Because the challenge about bend is that you can't pull the horse's head to turn and achieve bend. If you can imagine you have a piece of metal in your mouth and somebody is pulling it to steer you, you're not going to softly and sweetly with balance follow it. You're going to guard against it, brace against it. And then as a result of your head turning in the opposite direction, your balance goes onto that inside shoulder. So now you can't bend. The barrel rolls to the inside and the hind leg engages. Now the body is bent in the opposite direction of travel. So the first part of being able to bend correctly is that you can get the horse to follow the rein because you use your leg, you're steering the shoulders, not the head. The more you have to pull the head to turn, the more you're pulling the horse off balance, and the less they're able to actually balance through that turn. The foundation of bend is being able to steer with your legs. And then this is where the aids are going to start getting a little bit complex, because we're going to use our rein to ask the horse to look in the direction of travel. How is your horse going to differentiate your rein aid that says look and your rein aid that says follow? So if we're asking, let's go with bend to the right. If we're asking for our horse to bend to the right, yes, we're asking them to turn to the right, but we're asking them to turn to the right from the left leg. They're moving away from the outside leg to come around the circle, but then they're going to drop the shoulder and fall in. They're going to do maybe a pivot. They're not going to balance their body. We also want the barrel tipped to the outside of the circle so that they can step the inside hind through into a position of balance and weight bearing, and then the balance is more into the left shoulder so that they can pick up the right leg and take the direction off the right leg. If we're steering with our hands, it 100% creates the opposite effect of the horse now is grounded and balanced into the right shoulder because they're trying not to be pulled off balance. And so then the barrel tips to the inside, and as a result, the hind leg can't engage because the barrel of the horse's body is now in the road preventing it. And so we can kind of like displace the shoulders to the outside of the circle. We have a fake bend, but that's not going to allow us to progress into higher level laterals like your shoulder in and travert and half pass and smaller circles and that kind of thing. So we're really paying attention to and identifying where this weight distribution is shifting to, where the horses are balancing into, and how we're going to communicate them to balance into and ground into their body to be able to maneuver and lift their shoulders freely. Another thing is that none of these rein aids are going to work if the horse is guarding against or bracing against any of the contact. And so this is why doing the in-hand work is foundational to anything that we're going to do in the saddle, not only from the perspective of the horse is really clear on its cueing and they understand how to respond to the aid, but also on the ground we can really focus our attention into our hands. When we're in the saddle, we're thinking about lots of things, thinking about moving with the horse, keeping the horse between us and the ground, you know, what our legs are doing, what our seat is doing. We've got all of these other elements in the conversation. When you're doing your in-hand work, you can purely focus on contact, what your bit pressure is saying, and whether your horse is bracing or guarding against the application of the contact, or if they're relaxing into seeking and following the contact. So we're not going to get them able to like bend in the direction of travel if they're guarding against, bracing against the contact, and they're going to guard and brace against the contact if we're pulling them off balance and our hands aren't just kind of like indicating to them what we would like them to do. That's really important to understand, is that we are not physically able to organize the horse's legs and do the balancing and the moving for them. It is the horse's responsibility to think about, put their awareness into their body and balance and coordinate their body. Our job is only to give them an indication of what we would like them to do. And so it doesn't matter how strong, assertive, or effective you are as a rider, it actually gets worse. Like the more powerful you get as a rider to, you know, manhandle and steer the horse underneath you, the more brace and tension they're going to hold in their body, because at this point now they're just trying not to fall over because you have so much influence over their movement. That we're really looking for that integration of movement where the horse is carrying us and we're just giving them direction versus, you know, physically trying to manipulate their movement and steer them. That's going to throw them off balance. So then, of course, we're looking at some layering that's happening of the aids there, some scaffolding, because to begin with, the horse doesn't know to move away from the leg. And that's the first conversation that we're having in the saddle of, you know, that associating from the ground, the bit pressure work from follow the rein. We're now associating it to move away from the leg so that they're following the rein away from the leg. And I know that this can sound a little bit backwards to what we're taught, because in the rule book, your steering, if you're doing dressage, is inside leg at the girth, outside leg behind. But your horse doesn't read the textbook. Somebody has to teach them how that sets them up for bend. A lot of trainers and coaches have never broken a horse in and have only ridden green educated horses that already know the aids. A lot of riders learn to ride on educated horses that already know their aids. And so we're starting at this like level of education where we're missing the foundation of how the horse understands the aids and how we can effectively communicate the aids. So the rein is a word, the word is follow. The leg is a word, the word is move away from. And then it's combinations of that that come together to create new words and language to the horse to start communicating through to getting that the higher level movement. So when we're asking the horse to bend, we're actually asking them to follow the outside rein to keep the size of the circle big, or keep them out on the circle. And so then we're using our yielding aid. So moving away from the inside leg to follow the outside rein is going to keep the circle big. And then the outside leg is turning into a closed inside rein so that it's creating this angle of bend through their body that's asking them to look where they're going, but kind of like keep their weight distribution into the outside shoulder, the barrel tipped to the outside, so that they've got this bend angle through their body now. Where you can get inevitably stuck here is that as riders, we're not even left and right either. So for most riders, the application of the right rein is a lot stronger than the left. And so you'll have a lot of problems on the right rein with the horses falling in and falling out, purely because of the consciousness and the awareness of the rider to keep the pressure even in the horse's mouth in both the right and the left rein. You need to train your hands to be able to maintain that pressure, and it doesn't feel right in your body because your hand tends to be dominant and one hand tends to be dominant over the other. So now you're going to unintentionally pull them to the turn to the right there rather than, you know, steer them with your legs. And the thing is that even if the eyes on the ground, coach, instructor, whatever you have, is telling you to ride softer with your right hand, because of your conscious awareness being in one hand and not the other, as you do the thing with the right hand, the left hand follows. So as you're giving with your right hand, your left hand is also giving. And so then the pressure is staying unequal, uneven, even though you think you're giving and you're softening that right rein. You've got to, this kind of work, when we start to really develop the coordination in our body, is a lot like being able to pat our head and rub our tummy. Is you need to be able to put your awareness into both hands individually and independently, and that takes a lot of practice and wiring and coordination as a rider. So a simple kind of cheat is to just cross the reins over so that the reins are actually holding your hands in the same place, but you really are going to have to do a lot of work with regards to putting your mind into your left hand and being able to relax your right hand so that you're not steering them with your dominant hand. You're able to keep the pressure equal between both of your hands. And so a lot of people get stuck here for a very long time. I, hands down, 100% was one of them. And then the same with being able to rotate the upper body. So when you're turning, if your body is turned in the opposite direction, then your upper body will be telling them to go left, even though your steering is telling them to go right. So what does the horse listen to? What your body is telling them to do, or what the reins are telling them to do? So you want to make sure that your body is on the line that you're riding. That in itself is its own practice of coordination. You need to give yourself some grace. All of this coordination work happens in the walk. You've got 1,000 repetitions to do. So 1,000 repetitions seems a lot, but you know, we can do 100 push-ups in a day, do 100 twists in the saddle, a ride, and you'll have the coordination within 10 days. So it can seem like a lot. And if you just focus on that's what you've got to do, then you will progress. And if you decide that it's too much and it's too hard, then you will stay stuck there, because there's only so much the horse can do if it's trying to fight your body being balanced in the opposite direction of where you're asking the horse to go, or your rein aids pulling the horse off balance when you're asking them to turn. So this coordination work is good for the horse and good for the rider. It means that we can spend the time warming the horse up appropriately. It's good for the horse to walk for 15 to 20 minutes before we do anything else. And most riders get bored with that. They don't want to be walking for 20 minutes. They want to be cantering and jumping. So spending the time in the walk, you know, the time flies when you know what to do, when you know what you're focusing on. Focus on your coordinated efforts to integrate your movement, be with the horse in those moments so that the horse has more coordination itself. The communication is clearer, so the horse understands what you're asking of them. So you've got more coordination, you've got more communication, and the horse is better balanced because now your movement is integrating better with the horse. We are doing these movements unconsciously in the saddle anyway. Think about it, put some time and effort into it. Consciously and intentionally coordinate your body to integrate with the horse and communicate to the horse, and you'll progress so much quicker than all of the unconscious and unintentional movements that your body's doing just trying not to fall off. So we've got the outside leg that's creating the turn, not the inside rein, and it's steering into a closed inside rein because the horse is being asked to look in the direction of travel. The inside leg and the outside rein is keeping the outside of the circle shape, so whether we want it bigger or whether we want it smaller. And then the icing on the top, a little cherry on the top, is that now we can ask the horse to ground and balance into the inside hind to increase the maneuverability of the shoulders. This only happens when you have relaxation into contact, acceptance of contact, seeking the contact for direction. It doesn't happen if we've tried to create submission to the bit by the horse tucking behind, or if they're bracing against or they're guarding against the application of the bit. So all of that work with getting the cueing to work and the coordination to the aids to work has to happen first before the horse can physically shift its balance and bend in the direction of travel. But once we have this little magic outside rein is so good for helping the horse organize its balance and call its balance together. So we really need to be aware of the timing of the application of the aid. Put your mind into your body for a moment and think about if you were trying to turn and your balance was on your inside shoulder and then the rider is now pulling your head to try and get you to turn more. If you think about that and you put your awareness into your body and what that would feel like, you're not going to be able to turn. So the capacity for the horse to turn happens when its weight and its balance is distributed into the right places. So in particular, that's why we're working so much about keeping the balance on the inside hind, because that allows the shoulder to lift and step away from the midline. So it can lead with the shoulder then. So what we can do is we can come back into our body when we're riding. This is a good exercise to do when you're riding. And you can imagine you've got those little feet on your butt cheeks and your butt cheek feet are walking with the horse. As your seat is walking, what you're feeling is the hind legs lifting and stepping through. Don't let anyone tell you you can't be taught feel. This is how you learn feel. So you start to develop an awareness for what the horse's body is doing and associate it to what you're feeling. So what you're feeling here is as your hip lifts, their hind leg is stepping through. So their hind legs are stepping through and it's creating a lift through your pelvis, and now your pelvis is walking with the horse's walk. It's hard to feel if you don't have enough forward, if you don't have the horse in front of your leg. So you need to have developed good forwardness, have your horse in front of your leg, and now you can feel the swing of the walk. The other thing that happens is the barrel swings out as the hind leg steps through. So let's say the right leg is stepping through, the barrel swings to the left. The left leg is stepping through, the barrel swings to the right. So as your seat is lifting to walk with the hind legs, your legs are also unconsciously and unintentionally swinging with the barrel as it swings left and right. And so as your hip lifts, your leg swings on. That is the timing of the aid. That is when the leg is grounded and you can influence the movement. So we're going to then, you think about your rein is like a clutch and you can change gears with it, and your leg is like your accelerator. In particular, this is inside leg and then the outside rein, because we have acceptance of contact, we have balance, we have bend. And so now we can use that outside rein to ground and balance the hind leg. That then creates more power. That's what gets the impulsion, that's what gets the drive, that's what gets them springing off the ground instead of dragging themselves across the paddock and the arena just with their shoulders. So the outside rein is closing and asking them to balance. So your hand is closing, sorry, not closing the rein against the neck. Your hand is just gently squeezing and relaxing, just to put a little bit of awareness into the horse's body to shift their balance into their inside hind. And so then you can either ground their balance into that hind leg and center them into that balance if you need more balance because they're like too strung out or on the forehand or rushing. You can center that balance in. But then also if they start to lose a bit of forwardness, momentum, and energy, you can add the inside leg as just to accelerate a little bit. And so then you're using a coordinated effort of timing between your inside leg and your outside rein to try and affect the balance of the stride and the tempo so that you can maintain the rhythm of the working trot. What you want to be conscious of is if you can do this, you now have a whole lot of influence over the horse. So you now can do a lot of damage to their body because their initial guard and brace that they have against you is protecting them from injury. That in itself can create, you know, tension and stress on their body that can also create like long-term damage. But now your integration of movement has a lot of influence over their balance and coordination. So we can do a lot of damage to their body if you're not aware of how the horse should be moving functionally for good movement. The more we play with their head, the more we play with their mouth, the more tension we're going to create in the body, the more damage we're going to do. The more we create with our seat and the softer the less we manipulate their body and their balance, the more we allow them to find their own balance and carriage, the sounder they will be. So we're not going to feel this like moments of beautiful lightness and carriage and then drill harder into them to maintain it and work a deeper frame and more submission to the bit, because it's just going to damage the softness that we've created by, building the horse's trust and confidence in our aids and their capacity to relax into the ask of those aids and not brace against them to try and protect their body. So that is a lot, but it's also your basics, your foundation of riding, being able to balance the horse through turns. You need this to be able to develop the lightness and the maneuverability of the forehand so that you can do smaller, tighter turns, reduce the concussion that is created on the horse's body, keep the top line active so that you've got relaxation and swing. You can activate the diaphragm, so now they're holding their posture from their diaphragm muscles, keeping them breathing while they're working, and so that they're not holding that tension from their breath. We can now do changes of bend and balance, so you can do like your serpentines and that kind of thing, but you're also going to be able to connect your fences, say in a jump course, and the connection is smooth because now you know how to adjust the horse's balance and bend into the direction that it's going. And then with practice, like, you don't have to work so hard to get that shift in balance and bend. You just give the horse the indication that you're changing direction, and then the horse can coordinate its own coordinated action in response to the ask. So there's a lot that goes into our ridden work and effective communication, and it is why we can feel so frustrated and stuck when we're developing our own skill set, and why you really need to understand, you know, the idea of how we're going to develop language with the horse and then how we're going to communicate to the horse, because then once we're doing our ridden work, we really want a good relationship with our hands and our legs as a tool for communication and not like a coercive manipulation of their body, trying to pull them around and steer them. You know, the idea of pressure release is very good for introducing new words and new language to the horse. But once you're in the saddle, like let's say, for example, you're holding contact, there is no release of pressure when you're asking the horse to seek your hands for communication. You want to have that communication there, and the horse is seeking you and seeking that language, asking you what's next, and then that's, you know, having the horse met in a mental state of asking what's next is also a prerequisite to balance, because now they're asking what's next in anticipation of having to change direction, speed, length of stride or length of frame. And that is what, how we communicate to a horse to engage its core, is having them set up on a direction with the anticipation of changing direction. So there's a lot going on there. I'd love to hear what you think about all of that. If you had any ha-ha moments, make sure you share them with us, share them with your friends, tag us on Instagram. This is the work that we do in the school. And so, you know, we've got riders that have only been riding for 3 years being able to implement these skill sets. And so whilst it is challenging to learn, it is still achievable. When you slow down and you focus on your coordination and your balance and effective communication with the horse, understanding what the horse needs from us to be able to work with balance and carry us easily, all of those things are going to come together, and that's what creates that smoothness, that lightness, that flow state where we're moving together in an integrated movement. That's it from me for today. Until next time, happy trails. If you're starting to realize that escalating pressure and having pressure release is the only tool in your toolkit inevitably results in conflict and manhandling your 500 kilo plus fur baby, you have to check out our free masterclass, Say Yes to a Happy Willing Horse. There is an art and a science to everything we do with our horses. The science is the undeniable behavioral training and manipulation of the internal chemistry, neurotransmitters and hormones. Hello, dopamine. The art is in the connection and the relationship. How your horse behaves is a reflection of who they are in relationship to you, how they receive your instruction, and how safe you make them feel to follow your lead. And if you didn't want that, ride a motorbike. We know that our horses are emotive, intelligent, sentient beings that are aware of the manipulative, coercive, and sometimes abusive tactics used to force them to cooperate. And we can seek a better way. The foundations of holistic horse handling are nervous system regulation, compassionate leadership, communication, and emotional agility. These elements are critical to have a handle on before going to work with your horse, so that we can develop the psychological safety for the horse to communicate how the training can be of benefit to them. Our training should be happening for them, not to them. If we want a horse that we can have trust and confidence in, and that seeks to look after us first, we need to create an environment where learning is fun, movement feels good, and our horse is asked to be ridden. This sounds impossible to you, know that it's not. It's a reality hundreds of our students have achieved. It just requires coming home and a relearning of what we lost due to peers, coaches, trainers, and other influences teaching us that that kind of softness and kindness creates unsafe horses. In truth, it is the opposite. To create safe, willing horses, we first need to create a felt sense of safety and a felt sense of belonging. We need to be strategic and intentional how we set the horse up for success, so as not to overface ourselves and our horses, and we need to create experiences where we build trust and confidence in each other. If you're ready for your horsemanship and horse riding to look like this, take the first step, click on the link in the show notes, and join us in our free masterclass, Say Yes to a Happy Willing Horse. Or you can find it over on our website at www.equestrianmovement.com/sayyes. Until next week, happy trails.